shall not be free from the terror by night, nor the arrow that flies by day, nor for the pestilence that wanders in the night, nor for the destruction that awaited in the noonday hour. Now come on, walk. This world of trouble, we gotta love one another. Come on and take a fellow man by the hand, try to help him to understand that we'll all be together forever and ever, and be taken to the promised land.
Go to www.enlightenradio.org. A tablet or regular web browser on a computer, laptop or desktop, you're going to see the player at the top of the page. But on the phones, I don't know, sometimes you can't see the player. You can see everything else. It's hidden behind one of the, there's a little tab in there, but not easy to find. So in that case, just go to player.enlightenradio.org and you can hear about it. That's the only thing that will show up is the player. And we're on most of the time. This computer is not 100% dedicated to, live broadcast. I haven't set that up yet, but it's close. It's close. Anyway. Okay. On to one other piece of good news before I get to the bad news. And that is that the completion of the Microsoft Activision merger will transform the video game and technology labor market. One of the most interesting things is that I think it was by the way, just last week, announcement that Microsoft had completed its acquisition of Activision. Activision Blizzard, by the way, represents probably one of the major gaming platforms for both developing games and for actually marketing finished games as well, and cloud platforms. It's a unionized workplace. And one of the big questions was whether Microsoft's acquisition was going to recognize the union and what its attitude toward labor relations were actually going to be, since this would be certainly new ground for Microsoft. As a former Microsoft employee, I can testify that nobody ever heard a favorable word about unions from the management of Microsoft. Anyway, Microsoft has agreed in a groundbreaking, allegedly legally binding labor neutrality agreement that it will remain neutral when Activision Blizzard employees express interest in joining a union, provided a clear path to collective bargaining for almost 10,000 workers. Communication Workers of America President Claude Cummings said, "It is a new day for workers at Activision Blizzard." So this is an important deal, is how, labor especially in the tech industry, can move forward. And I salute the people at CWA and the people at Activision that are working on this and finding the way to make this a good working kind of labor relations. It's not going to be exactly like, the industrial setup in the 30s and 40s, and even today in manufacturing. It's going to be different in ways perhaps we can be great to get some people on and talk about. I'd love to find some people from Activision to actually do that with me. Anyway, I think that's a good project for me. anyway, that's good news, especially in the technology field and especially with Microsoft, which, legendary for its aggressive positions, and it's the near monopoly positions for a long time in the PC market before the advent of a whole new range of devices has sort of reduced its share. But nonetheless, it's competitive on almost every front, and second or third most highly capitalized tech company in the world. And its primary owner, you know, Bill Gates, is, I probably should say Bill and Melinda Gates, since she has quite a bit of stock in it right now as well. Represents probably the flagship of one of the more powerful billionaires walking the planet. Okay, so close to a trillionaire, actually. Anyway, this is an interesting, you know, partnership or deal with labor. Not a partnership. Microsoft has opposed this, but I think part of the deal of getting rid of antitrust and other considerations in Europe and here was coming to an understanding about we're not going to take the traditional California tech attitude toward labor. Okay. Okay, but now on to the bad news. Well, the biggest part of the bad news is reflected, I would say, let me get the report here right in front of me. I just had it. well, actually, two reports. The first one is from Bloomberg, I believe. I'm right. Yeah. Car owners fall behind on payments at the highest rate on record. So apparently they started tracking, you know, where car owners were on payments in around 1990. But right now they're falling behind on their auto loans at the highest rate in three decades when they started counting. With interest rate hikes making newer loans more expensive, millions of car owners are struggling to afford their minimum payments. So it's a clear indication of distress at a time when the economy is sending mixed signals, particularly about the health of consumer spending. The percent of subprime, that means riskier, might not. They loan you the money for the car, but they're expecting a whole bunch of you not to be able to pay it. So you got high interest rates. Anyway, the percent of subprime auto borrowers at least 60 days past due on their loans rose to over 6% in September, the highest in data going back to 1994. In April, that figure slipped from a previous high of 5.9, but after burning through tax returns, contending with a shakier job market, and grappling with still elevating inflation, more car owners have become delinquent. So when you lose your car, you can't get to work unless somebody drives you. And unless the problem is widespread and your friend lost their car too. Or you were already, you know, carpooling with someone who was behind on their payments and lost their car. Now neither of you have a ride to work. Or, for that matter, to go get new jobs. So that's an ominous sign. And I think that it's an indication, okay, that despite the rise in labor militancy, you know, which is obvious from the high profile labor negotiations going on that we just talked about earlier in the show. Despite that, for the working class as a whole, nothing is getting better. Nothing. even though we have the most pro-union president in my memory, and even though he is also seeking to provide cushions through basically a lot of debt for people during the pandemic and in a much more democratic rhetoric than we heard from the previous, Trump. Despite all that, nobody's getting any better at all. And we have to say that the inflation has robbed a lot of people of wealth. The tighter labor market has made up for some of it. The strike wave is making up for some of it, but it's still there. And the news this past week, of course, it has exposed essentially what has been a lie told almost universally on media ever since the start of the Ukraine war. And that is that this argument with Russia over NATO, which is what it's all about, is going to cost a tremendous amount on the world once the Russian oil market was, and natural gas as well, was disrupted. And, you know, Europe went into a spin trying to figure out how to either replace it or supplant it. And the only way, only available choice was higher priced export of U.S. natural gas and other stuff. Because it's more expensive to get it over there than go through the Nord Stream pipeline, which, of course, it's now been exposed by Seymour Hersh that the United States blew up in the Baltic Sea. Ho-hum. Anyway, despite all that, you know, the fact that it was going to, that it did cause a big bump in inflation immediately, you know, I said, well, the Fed will take care of that. Well, the Fed's not going to take care, not going to bring prices down when supply is short. It's not. I mean, you know, try to, but interest rates will go up, and they have. But these supply shocks are there, and the tariffs that Trump instituted against China and the trade war that started and has accelerated significantly under Biden, that's making inflation worse. And now the geopolitical turmoil in the Middle East, in which all of the major oil producers are neighbors. Not all of them, but most of them. you know, it's hard to foresee oil prices going down and possibly spiking up again. And all that comes straight out of the pockets of, you know, the consumer and the working class person. And especially in energy, those costs roll over. I mean, they have an immense effect on the price of production, price of farming. So, you know, it's not just the gas pump. You're going to see it, you know, down. It's going to go downstream throughout most of the economy. And even though it may be temporary or maybe not. The uncertainty itself will start to cause hedges, you know, people, you know, different resources to hedge fuel. You know, and I who knows what how the politics will play out in the Middle East, you know, with Iran, Saudi Arabia, and the other Persian Gulf producers, as well as Morocco. Who knows what whether there will be river repercussions in Venezuela. So it's a those are all inflationary threats. That the only remedy that appears to be would be, you know, one is to reduce interest rates, but that's not going to happen because the, raise interest rates. But if any more raises of interest rates will, at some point when you keep raising them, you will force a recession. And the problem with that is that now you're going to be forcing a recession at a point which you're already at record deficit spending coming out of the pandemic, and then added on to it military support for Ukraine, and then and a rise in the military budget. And then, of course, the inflation is the interest rates is now forcing, you know, owners of government treasuries to be paid, you know, significant bump in interest payments. So you're going to have a problem if a recession does hit, which eventually it will on the path they're going. You're going to have a problem finding additional resources at that point to recover from another major slump. So you can see it's all becoming, the big problem is uncertainty. And then added to that, we have the political crisis in the United States where the Republican Party doesn't seem to be able to function within the constitutional framework as it has evolved, and is essentially just carrying out a wrecking job and offering the option of, well, you don't like what the government's doing? How about just dysfunction where it doesn't do much or can't? So we're seeing not only serious economic vulnerabilities in the short range, but political ones too. And while all this is going on, regardless of the short range considerations, the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer. The gulf in wealth increases to expand and concentrate. So that's the bad news. And then ahead of us, we have a choice between Biden. Some of what he's doing is making it worse. Some of what he's doing is trying to make it better. Consequence, we're not really going anywhere. And two, the weather's getting worse. And three, the international situation, the whole legacy of the U.S., let me just say, imperial missions around the world. They're in crisis. They are in crisis. They have no solutions. And the principles they say they assert become a mockery in practice. You know, we can visit some of them, but I mean, I think everybody has a sense of this, that it's not working. Whatever the military international domination strategy is, it's not working. It's not bringing peace. So, and of course, we're always wondering who's really making those decisions. Pretty clear that Mr. Jamie Dimon, head of J.P. Morgan, has a much bigger voice than you or I. So anyway, I think we're going to pause that right there for the day with that one. And stay tuned to next week when we're I'm going to try to get into some issues. I like the one about the Arch 2 hub, the big jobs thing for West Virginia that is on the agenda of the AFL-CIO, I know, and finding out more about that and, you know, what the possibilities are, what we should fight for or against in the whole process. Okay, take care of each other. It's late, but everything comes next.